Marshall here. Welcome back to The Realignment.
So the purpose of decentralization is not to enable the best of times. It's to protect against the worst of times, where it is true that companies are more efficient. It is true that companies can make decisions faster. It is true that we had three different code repositories for Constitution DAO in the first few days. It is true that decentralization is much more messy, but that does hinder in some ways the best of times. It took longer to set this all up because we're decentralized. It took longer to set this up as a DAO. But the flip side is that it protects against the worst of times, is that because there's so many more people involved, because everyone has a voice, because no single person has a say, it is harder for any one person to take control of this initiative and to subvert the voice of the people and everyone involved in the community.
Last week, Sagar and I really enjoyed interviewing Kyle O'Scanlan about pretty much everything forward-looking in the finance and tech categories that you could imagine. We covered the metaverse, supply chains, inflation, and Web3. So far, it's actually been one of our highest downloaded episodes ever. Still, if there was one complaint we got from the audience, it was despite the hype and the big talk, when it came to the actual discussion of Web3, which is best understood as a conversation about what the internet can or should look like, we were all still too vague. There were many requests to have people who are actually building and spending time in those spaces to put more meat on the bones of the conversation. For good or for ill, we're going to continue to hear terms like crypto, decentralization, NFTs, Web3, and today's topic, DAOs, aka decentralized autonomous organizations. We mentioned this briefly in the episode last week, but it's good to get a little deeper into what we're going to focus on today. DAOs are newly emerging models for organizing, running projects, organizations, and entities. If a traditional company slash LLC with a leader or CEO is one model, think of a DAO as the polar opposite. We've got two great guests to help us learn more about DAOs. Will Pappers, the co-founder of Syndicate DAO, and Julian Weiser is a co-founder and colleague of mine at OnDeck, where he invests in startups via our ODX Accelerator program. As we cover Web3 ideas more, we're always looking for ways to discuss these topics without making everything about pure speculation and inside baseball. Today's topic, then, is the perfect way to hit at that intersection of politics and tech that we are so interested in. So, here's the deal. For the first time in 33 years, Sotheby's is auctioning one of the 11 surviving copies of the U.S. Constitution this Thursday. It's actually the only copy owned by a private collector. Will and Julian are contributors to Constitution DAO, which is raising money to place a bid on the Constitution. The copy has been valued at between $15 and $20 million and will likely go for much, much more than that. So they've definitely got their work cut out for them. The project started on a whim last Thursday, and this episode is the last minute recording, so be sure to check out the show notes and our Substack email on Thursday afternoon to learn more. This is the first time I've had to say this on a Realignment episode, plus we don't technically have a lawyer at the moment, so I'm going to make the call there. So I'm going to issue this blanket statement that nothing we say on Web3 topics should be considered investment advice, and this is for educational purposes only. Go to constitutiondao.com to learn more about the project, and donate and contribute if you find it at all compelling. We're not all the way there yet when it comes to Web3, and don't worry, this podcast is not going to get overly focused on this really, really early space. I'm just personally excited that for the first time, I can direct our community to a project slash space where they can actively build and learn from without running into the gridlock and inaction that makes politics so depressing lately. Last notes before we get into the episode, don't forget, this is a show that likes to hawk a lot of books. You can go to the show notes to get the link to the Realignments bookshop, where you can support authors who've been on the show. We get a 10% cut of all sales, and most importantly, these sales come from independent booksellers who, as we all know, need all the assistance they can get. Secondly, this is a show that's building out our Substack. We got actually a lot of really great submissions last week that we're going to feature more so. We're still figuring out how we want the audience to participate, but for now, we are going to feature audience responses, arguments, opinions on our topics. We've got a really good one in response to Kyle O'Scanlan. It will be there on Thursday. Follow the show notes to also subscribe to that Substack. A lot of great stuff here. Last but not least, huge shout out to Lincoln. Network for supporting our work. Let's get into the episode. Will, Jillian, welcome to The Realignment.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
It's great to be here, Marshall.
I've never had the chance to ask a question this direct on The Realignment before. Why are you and your crew trying to purchase a copy of the U.S. Constitution? Let's just do it this way. Jillian, I'll throw to you first. You're at the bottom of my screen right now. Will, pick up. We'll kind of just switch it around and feel free to follow up.
Sure. Well, I think that you're on the surface. It sounds quite ridiculous, and I think that that's part of what makes it so fun. There's something really exciting about the idea of a group of mostly strangers banding together, you know, in the span of 7 days to go and accomplish something, you know, as ridiculous as co-owning a copy of the U.S. Constitution. For us, I think that there's the meme layer, which is absolutely great. It's sort of the Nick Cage National Treasure, steal the Declaration of Independence meme, and just all the memes around like owning a piece of such a significant document. And there's also the layer beneath it, which is this importance around what the U.S. Constitution means to a lot of people, what democracy means to a lot of people. And those two things play really well together. Maybe, Will, you can take it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. The interesting thing is that Constitution Day really started out as this like almost absurd idea of like, whoa, can we actually do this as a community and come together to achieve something that seems totally impossible? And now at this point looks pretty likely. And over time, it really evolved in this wonderful organic way into this radical experiment in participatory governance, where everyone in the DAO, and there's been like thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people joining as we've picked up steam, is contributing their opinions on our mission, our values, how we should govern this really important piece of history, how we should frame it. And it's been something that's united people across the political spectrum. It's been something that's given people a very tangible experience with this kind of history. And it's allowed everyone to have a say in how these documents are framed and presented, which is very unique and something that you could not find in any museum.
I'm glad you started there, and we will get to the specifics of what a DAO is, decentralized autonomous organization, how that fits into a broader Web3 conversation. But I just want to ask a basic question here too. Why is this seemingly impossible? I was thinking about this as I was writing these questions. I could see a world where in 2011, we say, hey, let's launch a Kickstarter. And on the Kickstarter, we're going to raise all this money, and we aren't going to use Discord yet because Discord isn't around, but we'll have a Reddit forum, as you know, in the same way that Wall Street Bets has a Reddit forum, or we could even use AOL group chat, RIP, dating myself to a certain perspective. But what is fundamentally impossible as you all think about this process that you're going about with creating the DAO and then trying to actually bid for this auction? And that also gives you an opportunity to actually explain what you are actually doing here.
Well, I think that maybe, well, you can speak to the mechanics around sort of the actual collective ownership component around, or collective governance around this this initiative. But, and I think there's a lot of things that the new technology enables there. But I think that something that's also worth noting is just the sheer challenge of coordinating a large group of people to work towards any goal in 7 days when they've never worked together before and when there's just a lot to figure out. Right. It's not just saying if this was 90 days, if we had 90 days to figure this out, I think it would be a very different situation in that, well, it might be easier to, you know, get everything in place from a legal structure perspective, to get everything in place from a communications perspective of how we're actually going to be, you know, doing things around governance and what our plans are and what our motivations are, you know, things like. As simple as what do we do with it once we win it, right? Like those things are a lot easier to figure out when you don't have a time crunch. So I think that the answer here is like, it's just really ambitious. It's like sort of a, you know, a superhero movie or something where you're having to try and really beat the clock. And we're really trying to beat the clock here. And I think that that's the thing that makes it really hard. But I think that there's a lot of things that are happening right now that, you know, well, you can speak to probably better than me, you know, that around sort of governance and ownership and things like this that just don't happen, that wouldn't be possible, you know, if it was on a sort of a centralized platform like Kickstarter.
Yeah. So I think that the idea of collective governance is what makes it really unique. In so many Kickstarters and Patreons and such, you have a consumption relationship. There is someone who is producing things and you give them money and then you consume whatever it is they produce. And you can leave comments and you can share feedback and you can fill out surveys, but you don't really have truly a say. You can't say you don't have a say in what art an artist should produce next or how a board game's dynamic should be designed. The unique thing about the governance tokens for Constitution DAO, which people are receiving when they donate, is that this allows everyone to have an equal say in the documents itself. For example, the contributors on the team who are doing a lot of work in the background, Jillian and I are in touch with Sotheby's for the auction and in touch with a bunch of tax lawyers and setting up legal entities. We're not reserving any tokens for ourselves. We have no special say in this. Every single person has an equal say. Every single person has a voice and can decide the future of this constitution together. So it shifts it from this consumption relationship where you give money and you receive entertainment, content, goods, and instead you're giving money and you're receiving a voice, and you're receiving a voice in how the constitution should be displayed, how it should be exhibited, how it should be presented to the public. That is very, very unique, and something that I think crypto is uniquely sort of suited for, this kind of radical participation in how we can govern things together.
And just to understand something real quick, when you say everyone gets an equal say, are you saying that even if I gave, let's say, $500,000 and Julian gave $500, when it comes to the actual decision of, hey, we want this to go to the Smithsonian, or actually we think this would be a better fit at the Museum of Modern Art, would you still have an equal vote there? How does that part work?
Yeah, it's still proportionate to how much you've put in, but no one has like special say or an overriding say in the governance of this constitution. And the thing that I think is really interesting here is that the fact that there is no one decision maker or no group of decision makers means that people need to do a lot of bottom-up circulating of their ideas and their values. Different people are advocating for different ways to present and frame the Constitution. And they can't just go to me and Julian. We're not the leaders of this. They need to go to the entire community and put things to a vote for the community. There's no one who decides these things besides the community itself. So in some ways, like the Constitution was in its own way a radical experiment in self-governance that has worked quite well for the United States, the Constitution DAO is also a radical experiment in self-governance of this historical artifact.
And Julian, I'm curious, based on what Will just said, when you're thinking of participation and governance, you interchangeably used governance and ownership. What makes a good citizen member of a DAO? Because it's not as if we had a world where you just onboarded the internet into any type of governance structure, I don't think it'd be easy to imagine that turning out the right way. Obviously, people are purchasing something. There's a degree of skin in the game. But how do you think, as we're making and conducting these experiments, and a variety of folks, not yourselves, are making very, very bold claims of what DAOs can do? People are making claims, and I'm not attacking these claims, but once again, it's an experiment. We should welcome that. People are saying, hey, this raises questions about this nature of the nation state. I met a person who said this is the most important development since the actual constitutional convention, when a modern form of liberal democracy came about. This is just like the Treaty of Westphalia, where the modern nation state, I think the secret here is that people probably need to cool it on the rhetoric a tiny bit, but just speak to how you think about those frameworks, because it's both kind of crazy, but like you said, this is a superhero movie, so let's run with it.
Yeah, well, I think that responsibility is a really important part. And, you know, one person recently said, when you buy into a project, you're not getting something that's worth money. You're actually getting responsibility. And I think this is the key thing, is that people here really want to feel like they have an opportunity to shape what comes next and to actually really change the world. I think this, you know, do your own research. We haven't been able to find anything that negates this, but it seems like this would be the largest purchase by a collective group of an item has this much renown and that is this expensive. It's a very unusual thing, and it's really crazy that it might actually happen. It's kind of a break the internet type moment in the regard to that it kind of changes what we think is possible on the internet. And then the sort of thing that Will was talking about around coordination, it's like people have different ideas and they have to, you know, actually work and have conversations with other people in the community to say, hey, this is what we think we should be doing with the Constitution. This is, you know, here's some reasons that maybe you disagree. Let's talk through them. You know, there needs to be like this discussion and healthy debate as to what happens. And that's just a thing that wouldn't happen in sort of a more of a consumption based format where you're just sort of, you know, you're pitching in to contribute to a creator's project or something like that. This is very much a collaborative thing. Again, everybody has the opportunity to opt in. And the thing that gets us most excited is that the people who opt in and you know, become, you know, people who are helping us, you know, part of this convention to buy the Constitution, they will actually be just the first people, right? Because there are going to be so many more people in the future who can actually participate as well, because they'll be able to buy in after the auction is won. They'll be able to go and there will be a liquidity pool, which means that there will be a token supply for them to buy into and actually, you know, more and more people, and maybe it's millions of people at some point, will actually be able to be a part of this community and participate in this great experiment.
One thing worth mentioning also is like, these are donations with no expectation of profit. These governance tokens don't have any value, and people are doing this not because they hope to make a quick buck. They're doing it because they believe in the long-term stewardship of this document. This is people coming together saying, we want to govern this constitution and figure out how to approach this history. Crypto is sometimes criticized for being very speculative or very bubbly. This is the opposite. These are donations for without any expectation of profit to allow people to work together to steward this history. So everyone's motivations are altruistic. They are what is best for the Constitution and what is best for its artifact, because no one is expecting to make a profit off of this. It's a like charitable endeavor of the purest form, which is something that DAOs enable in a really new way.
And this is the key thing that I will make sure to hit in the intro. The money is donated to an educational foundation. So this isn't just engaging in rhetoric here. This is very literally not a situation that goes that way. So something we need to do here, because we need to balance both the interesting ideas with the actual defining terms, especially for a general audience, is there are two terms that have been thrown about that we really need to define here. Let's start with what a token is. We've said token a couple of times. So like, just what at its core level is a token, Will? And then just what is a DAO? Like, what is a DAO beyond just what it stands for? Like, what does it mean? Like, what when the audience members who aren't watching on YouTube are trying to just conceptualize what we're describing here, what is it exactly?
Yeah. So in terms of what is a token, a token is governance. A token is a vote. A token is a way to express your point of view. And tons of different protocols have tokens. For example, Uniswap, which is a decentralized exchange, they have a token. And that token allows people to decide how Uniswap should spend the money in its treasury. Do they want to donate it to open source projects? Do they want to keep it and figure out what to do with it later? Do they want to pay contributors to the Uniswap code base. And that token gives governance rights that allows them to have a voice in what these organizations should do. These organizations are DAOs, which the definition, which is not a great definition, stands for decentralized autonomous organizations. What does this mean? Well, a decentralized autonomous organization, let's just break it down point by point. Decentralized is means that there's no specific leadership. Everyone has a vote. Everyone has a voice. There's no one who has an ability to who has an ability to have more say than someone else. Everyone has the same say over the governance of this constitution. No one has more say than others. What is autonomous? Autonomous, in its purest form, is that this entity runs itself. So with a constitution DAO, users who put up votes, if those votes relate to things in the blockchain world, like should we pay these contributors, for example, those votes can automatically execute based on the results. So there doesn't need to be a person saying, I approve this vote. The community as a whole can automatically have these votes take place. So it's fully autonomous. There's no person that needs to approve these things. There's no manual element. If the community wants to do something, that thing will happen within the boundaries of what the law allows. And then these are organizations. These are not companies. These are collectives coming together who have the shared goal. The group for Constitution DAO is one that's coming together to steward this artifact. That's the purpose of the organization, to steward the artifact together in a way that is responsible for the history that this document has, no matter people's views of it. This organization unites people across the political spectrum. We have people who believe that the First Amendment is the most important part of the Constitution and guarantees freedoms. We have people who believe the Second Amendment is the most important part of the Constitution. And we have people who believe that the Three-Fifths Clause is one of America's founding sins and is what should be emphasized. And all of these people with these different views of the Constitution can work together in this organization to be able to form an opinion on how this Constitution should be displayed. So in many ways, it is uniting people across the political spectrum, because all of us need to come to a vote. All of us need to come to a decision, and no one has more say than anyone else. So it's this bottom-up alignment, no matter people's politics.
A couple follow-ups, just to be very clear about this. You said no one has any more say, but if I have more tokens than you, don't I have more say? I just want to understand the mechanics of what you're describing.
Yes. So it's yes. The tokens you have is proportional to the amount you donate, but no one has extra tokens. No one has special like tokens with extra votes or extra veto power or whatever.
There are no dual class shares.
Exactly.
Here, which is for the audience's sake is, you know, certain times founders or other people earlier in a company will have more voting power than traditional shares offered to normal people. And my second follow-up, which I'd like you to both answer here, is what really attracted me to this project, aside from the fact that there's nothing speculative about this, not that I think that's inherently a problem, it's more just that means we could actually focus on the ideas without getting conspiratorial about your financial incentives and we could have a real intellectual discussion here, is the values that you two are both espousing, and a lot of the early people who've gotten aboard of this project, I really respect. What I wonder though is, under this model, what's to prevent those values from changing in a way that's really negative? So for example, I loved your articulation of, you know, the decentralized, the autonomous, and the organization part. But what I'm wondering here is, what if there's a world where the DAO is just in chaos? It turns out that the Three-Fifths Compromise folks and the Second Amendment folks and the First Amendment folks actually just can't just sync up with each other. And it causes a bunch of trouble and nothing is actually getting done. And the Smithsonian says, hey, if you don't give us a answer on where you want it displayed in the next week, we're going to void everything. Don't you see a world where, and maybe there's a technological limit on this, where you get a not so, or maybe even benevolent dictator to emerge and say, I will create order and unity within this chaos. That's, and once again, like that's kind of the story of how democracies and these type of processes actually tend to fail. So is there something, I'll throw this to you first, Julian, is there something technological that limits what I'm describing from happening? I'm just curious.
Well, I'll let Will take sort of he's the DAO expert. I mean, his day job is focused entirely on helping DAOs form. But you know, I think what I'll speak to is sort of the social component of this, which is, you know, quite frankly, democracy is messy. And I think that, you know, part of it, one of the best things about DAOs, in my opinion, is the fact that leadership structure, there is none. And you have to kind of really work towards finding common ground in sometimes a more painful way than you would if it was, you know, this person's the boss and what they say is what goes, right? But at the same time, once you actually come to those conclusions, it's something that much more people are bought into versus it just sort of being that dictatorial model. So I think that is one part that people don't necessarily understand, maybe, is that it's actually a good thing to have some degree of conflict and debate. And I think that it can reach unhealthy places probably at some points. It hasn't for us yet. But I think that the idea is that having that ability for people to have these discussions and for it to be a level playing field with regard to, you know, nobody has special permissions or special levels, I think that that's really, really something that makes this great.
And Will, can you speak to the technological part of what Julian's describing?
Yeah. At the end of the day, because these tokens can automatically execute votes related to on-chain activity, there is no possibility for a dictator to seize power besides being elected. And even if they were elected, you could always, in this like hypothetical, elect someone else. Like, there is no case where the power of the people tokens can ever be removed from the hands of the people. The tokens are called people tokens. So like we the people, and we the people will always in this DAO hold the power. Can someone accumulate a large number of tokens? Yes, and then they would have more voice. But can someone ever seize control with a voice beyond what they've been allocated? Can they ever take that power away from the people? They can't. Technologically, it's impossible for on-chain actions. Of course, as soon as you interact with the real world, it gets a little more complicated. So this is a bit of an idealized version of a DAO. But there's no way someone could subvert a vote. The vote is done with people's token holdings, and then that executes automatically. So no one can stop that at the end of the day.
I have to give you two, and actually not just you two, to your point, the entire group a compliment. You all have balanced the cutesy part, aka people tokens, with the fact that this is really substantive. So I just that's a real narrative compliment here. But something I'm wondering about in the broader writing about talking about tech space, there's been a lot of pushback in a couple of different books around this idea of the cult of the founder. They'll focus on, oh, if you look at, this is Bad Blood, Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, the various books on Adam Neumann and WeWork, books by Mike Isaac of the New York Times about Travis Kalanick at Uber. There is this critique that during the 2010s, the technology industry was too much invested in the idea that specific individuals were capable of making these big judgment calls that produced these, not just financial returns, but just really desirable outcomes. And it seems in many ways, this seems to be the polar opposite thing. But something I'm wondering about, whenever people talk about Mark Zuckerberg, who obviously is in various degrees of narrative hot water, I always think back to the time when Yahoo tried to purchase Facebook for around $1 billion, aka not anywhere near what Facebook's actual value was. And also, frankly, considering Yahoo's fate, not exactly the right acquirer for a company like that. And what was so unique about Mark in that example is he, as the founder, unilaterally, effectively said, I don't want this to happen. That didn't happen. And I wonder, as we're thinking of these DAOs and we're thinking of this idea that it's possible to have something greater be produced when there's this messy, incoherent whole, I'm curious just how you think if a lot of these decisions that founders and leaders are making at early points in time, how would that play out when there is much more buy-in? You could even bring up the examples of the founding fathers themselves having to make judgment calls around the compromises. So just how do you just think, and I'm not trying to play gotcha here, I'm just curious how you think of how these narratives that are swinging in different directions, how they basically play together.
I mean, I can go first. I think that when you bring up those examples, I think of sort of the worst cases. And I think that puts aside all of the cases where things go really well. So I don't necessarily know if there isn't a place for organizations where there is clear leadership, things like that. But at the same time, I think that there's a new category emerging where people can opt into something that's different. And if you look at the internet and you look at sort of just how diverse all of our options have become, you know, you used to have a couple of channels on TV, you used to have a couple of restaurants. Now you have so many options. I think that the way people think about the work that they do, the way that they think about the way that things are decided, the way that people collaborate and organize and work towards goals, these are all things that are going to be changing really significantly. And I think that the major shift here is sort of how Web3 has created an opportunity for new forms of cooperation that just weren't as possible when we were sort of in the Web2 world. And that diversification of options around these different ways of collaborating and working towards goals isn't going to eliminate the other options unless they're just really, really bad options. And hey, like, I think that we'll see, right? It's sort of like a market, and we see where people go.
And a quick follow-up before I throw this to Will, to critique myself asking the actual questions here, I really recommend that everyone who hasn't heard of these ideas before, they check out Tim Ferriss's episode with Naval Ravikant and Chris Dixon of A16Z. And something that Naval points out is a lot of the opportunity in Web3 spaces are going to be by creating, like you just said, Julian, new things. And it's actually somewhat not helpful for me to say, but Julian, what about this old thing that wouldn't do this exact way? Because we're not here to talk about refounding Facebook on a DAO. Maybe there's something there. But I think what's so exciting with this conversation is trying to think of what are new behaviors, what are new products you together rather than just trying to reinvent the wheel. But yeah, Will, please chime in.
I think that the purpose of decentralization is not to enable the best of times. It's to protect against the worst of times. Where
there's the highlight clip. That was really good.
Where it is true that companies are more efficient. It is true that companies can make decisions faster. It is true that we had three different code repositories for Constitution DAO in the first few days. It is true that decentralization is much more messy, but that does hinder in some ways the best of times. It took longer to set this all up because we're decentralized. It took longer to set this up as a DAO. But the flip side is that it protects against the worst of times, is that because there's so many more people involved, because everyone has a voice, because no single person has a say, it is harder for any one person to take control of this initiative and to subvert the voice of the people and everyone involved in the community. So centralized systems work really well until they don't. Facebook, we only a few years ago was seen as one of the most important tools for democracy around the world, before now being seen as one of the primary tools subverting it. That's an example where it worked really well in the best of times. It seemed like a great platform. It was free. It was easy to use. And then people realized the harms and they couldn't do anything about it. And I think that DAOs are messier in the best of times. You will never see a DAO that is the example of the best collaboration, the most efficient organization, the best at like bringing forward ideas. You won't see that. You just won't. Companies are better than that, better at that than DAOs. Nonprofits are better at that than DAOs. But you will also never see a DAO where one person takes control and it goes against the wishes of everyone involved and they can't do anything about that. You won't see that either. So the importance of DAOs is It's harder for us to put together this bid right now as a DAO. There were a lot of steps we had to do in the background that, thankfully, as a co-founder of Syndicate, we have a lot of experience setting up really complex DAOs that allow us to buy like real world assets. We helped CityDAO set up to buy land in Wyoming. We're used to these kinds of things, these kind of real world asset purchases. But it's harder as a DAO. But the end result is that it's more protected against that kind of vulnerability that centralized organizations have, where I can guarantee you, just like I can guarantee you that you will never see a DAO that is the most efficient organization in the world, I guarantee you that you will never see a DAO that does things that everyone thinks is bad. Because if everyone thinks it's bad, the DAO can't do it.
I had an image of a DAO hauled before Congress for various acts of various nefarious acts, and the model doesn't quite compete. Julian, you mentioned Web 2, Web 3. Audience is screaming at me. I'm going to give a definition during the introduction that I will tape after this, but we all know I will not quite do it justice. So can you do the unenviable task of, in 1 minute or less, really defining what Web 3 is, what Web 2 and what Web 1 were? And then frankly, let's just start here. Why do these wonky terms matter? I'm sure you've run into this. Like whenever I talk to people off camera about just normal people, or just, they're like, why are they using all these terms? Why are you saying Web 2? Why are you saying Web 3? So maybe talk about the meta there and then give a definition of terms.
Sure. So I think that people use terms as a way to tell a narrative. And I think that narratives and stories are powerful. So I think that partially the way we talk about Web 2 and Web 3 is not because there was this like clear line in the sand of when it exactly happened. Are we in Web 2 right now? Or are we in Web 3 right now? Versus talking about sort of these important elements of what we think the future of the internet would entail, right? Different facets there. So you know, when I think about Web 2, you know, I'm sure I've heard this. This is sort of an amalgamation from a bunch of other people's ideas. But, you know, Web 2, you really think about it from the perspective of both consumption and there's creation. So you're either sort of a creator or you're a consumer of created content. Most people are consumers of created content, traditionally speaking. And when I think about Web 3, I think about it adding the true participation layer. You know, I think that there is a lot to be said around, well, you know, if you're commenting on a YouTube video, or you know, you're having a conversation on, you know, some sort of social media app, like, is that participation? Maybe. But I think that like participation where there's sort of actual governance, and again, like, I don't think people are going to be using the term governance in the future. It's not very cool. I think it's actually kind of interesting because of the context in which we're talking about it here. But you know, people aren't going to be saying using the term NFT in the future either. They're going to just be referring to whatever the underlying or the actual thing is. Like, is it art? Is it music? Is it a plane ticket or something? You know, like, who knows what it could be. So I guess what I'm saying here is that Web3 is much more of the participatory element, and participation here means that there is some actual form of ability to vote. Ability to vote, ability to potentially be compensated, though not in the case of Constitution DAO, because, you know, again, none of the people here are taking any tokens or anything like that.
Anything to add, Will?
Yeah, Julian captured it very well. The thing that I think is another defining line, the reason why the Web3 term is useful compared to Web2 is that Web3 is open systems, while Web2 is closed systems. For example, it's not easy to, you can't port your Facebook followers to Twitter. If you don't like what Facebook's doing and you've built up a lot of time on the platform, you can't leave it. You can't go somewhere else. Web3 is a reaction to that. And Web3 is an attempt to bring back this open ethos of the internet and to say, if you don't like the way a certain platform is displaying your NFTs, you go somewhere else. The next platform you join will have all of your NFTs preloaded in, as if you were able to somehow have all of your Facebook posts automatically load into a new social platform like Twitter. That's really, really groundbreaking. And just like with Constitution DAO, if you like what Constitution DAO is doing, you can work for the DAO and try to and basically put up proposals for the community to gain more tokens and to have people gift you more and more tokens as a larger share. If you don't like what Constitution DAO is doing, you could give those tokens to someone else. You could say, I don't like what this is doing. I'm going to give up my voice. I'm going to give it to someone else. And the really cool part about Web3 is that this is an open system that allows all these things to work together seamlessly. The reason why Constitution DAO has been able to happen quickly, partially, is because it's also a story of different DAOs collaborating. I'm a co-founder of Syndicate DAO. We help set up DAOs with a focus on legal and compliance. Juicebox DAO sets up fundraising. Endowment advises on how to set up like these community-based initiatives. Mirror helps with storytelling. And all of these DAOs are coming together, lending their services for free. None of us are taking any fees on this because we want to see this happen. And all these different building blocks together gives us, in the span of 1 week, the ability to place a very competitive bid on a $20 million Sotheby's auction and the right framework in place to steward that if we win. And that's only possible in open systems, this kind of incredible leverage you get from collaboration. Suddenly, you're not alone. You're not trying to push things forward alone. You have an entire community working with you, and everyone's playing to their strengths. And we can split up and get things done and group back together and sync our results. And that's only possible in this open system.
Something I'm wondering, there's been a lot of really great writing about this project that will be put in the show notes. We'll push this out on our Substack, all that good stuff. But something that has really just come out of those pieces is this idea that this isn't just buying or attempting to buy the Constitution. There's actually a statement of values around openness and democracy. And this is obviously a show that looks at politics through a bunch of different venues. Today, we're looking at it through the future of the internet and technology, startups, etc. Why, when it comes to, I'll throw this to you first, Julian, why do you see Web3 as being something that's, and these ideals as being something that's actually very important, either for the United States of America or for other people in other countries who are looking at, hey, how should we structure our societies? How should we actually think? You know, we all know what's so cool about the Constitution is that the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, you know, for more than 200 years have actually served as real northern stars for many countries on Earth if they think through their systems. And as we're looking at these closed, more autocratic systems, and I frankly see these things as disasters and these things as terrible models. What does this all mean to the two of you? And then we'll finish up with the participation call to action for everyone.
Sure. I think that perhaps a good frame for this is kind of why we think it matters to do this for the U.S. Constitution or a copy of the U.S. Constitution. There's about 11 known copies. Why this matters. And I think that the reason we think it matters for this is because it draws this really powerful link between something that, you know, as Will said, has a lot of meaning to a lot of people, positive, negative. It also has a strong emotional connection to people with their experience with America. And everybody has a different American experience, and everybody's families have had different American experiences. You know, I'm just on the page right now because when people submit, they can add different quotes. And, you know, seeing people talk about being a first generation immigrant from South Korea and the United States giving them an opportunity to build something from nothing. You know, people saying stuff that's really funny and posting memes, right? There are people who are doing this because they think it's fun. And there are people who are doing this because they think it's meaningful. And I think that the overlap between those is actually quite high. I think that everybody understands that there's a lot of meaning here. And the thing that we think is so special is we're taking this document that's so foundational and we're adding sort of a next chapter to it, which is this chapter of saying, hey, we the people came together to do something really special with the new technology that we have. And that is get out there and create something, an organization of loosely affiliated people, work towards a goal, and actually co-own this, and then make it available for anybody in the general public to own. And not only that, but also make it visible and available for people to access and see in real life and interact with and learn about the entire story, not just the story of America, but the story of the thousands of people. I think it's probably about 10,000 people in the Discord right now who've come together from all over the world to work on this initiative together and this great experiment around participatory democracy.
Yeah, I also think that there's this general perception right now that democracy doesn't work. There's this perception that democracy is slower, more inefficient, can't get things done, can't make hard decisions. It is true that centralized systems always are more efficient than decentralized ones. But I see DAOs as kind of pushing back on this perception by saying that democracy allows for more voice, democracy allows for more participation, and democracy allows for more of a sense of community in these organizations than if it were a centralized option where we had a Kickstarter and, you know, a few of us bought the Constitution and everyone else was donating and just consuming the materials we were putting out. I do see DAOs as kind of this proof that democracy can be an alternative to centralized companies. And they're not perfect yet. It'll be a long time before we see DAOs that are able to do really, really ambitious things on the scale of Facebook or Google with the same level of fidelity. But I do think that every single experiment in the DAO space that everyone here is able to join right now helps push forward this idea that DAOs can accomplish incredible things. Buying a constitution is not founding the next social network, but it is proving that we can come together and achieve these incredible goals without any centralized leadership and with every single person involved having a voice.
I have my interviewer face on, but I'm not kidding. Like, I'm so pumped. I'm actually so pumped right now because we've never had an episode where we're describing some new thing or a problem or an interest set, and we can actually offer a call to action to say, hey, it's Tuesday. This is coming out Tuesday morning. The auction's on Thursday. People can join. So, like, what should people are gonna, this is gonna post at 3:30 Eastern time tomorrow morning. What should someone do? If someone is jazzed, they heard this, like, what we'll put the steps, but I just love to hear in these last 3 minutes, y'all's like call to action, like what people should do.
Sure. So the first thing is constitutiondao.com, right? That's the place where all the information is about the particulars of what we're doing, why we're doing it, our motivations. You've already heard it on the podcast, but you can read it there. You can hear from more of the teammates, the contributors who are taking part in this with us. Again, we're all just contributors. There's no one leader or leaders. You can go there and you can contribute and you can be a part of this and you can be one of us. And, there's last I looked, which was a few hours ago, and it's going really fast. You know, we had, I think, 2,500 or 3,000 individual contributors to this so far. And we had maybe $4 million, something like that, contributed. And it's pretty incredible to see. What I will say is that this is the opportunity. If you're interested in Web3 or if you're interested in crypto and you've never done it before, this is the place to get involved, to participate, to learn. You know, so many people we're seeing are creating their first Ethereum wallets and getting started with crypto specifically for this. And so many people are saying that this is their first DAO that they're participating in. And honestly, that's sort of the goal. The goal here is to give people the opportunity to learn about another way to use these amazing technologies and these forms of collaboration. And we're just so excited about, you know, onboarding so many more people to this, you know, this new way of thinking and this new way of interacting with each other.
There's a lot of ways that people can contribute right now. It's not just money. It's come join the Discord and come help shape our mission and values and governance. it's share the link with your friends and share this cool experiment that's going on in Web3 that is unlike everything we've ever seen before. And you can contribute your time to the DAO and then later on put a proposal asking the community to gift you tokens because of the work and the contributions you've done. And this is not something where you only have to contribute money to be a part of it. You can contribute time. You can spread the word. Every single person here can be a contributor to Constitution DAO. And all you have to do is join the Discord, help out, learn, ask questions, answer questions. That's really all it is to help make this happen and to help get us to hopefully a successful purchase of the Constitution at Sotheby's on Thursday.
Let's buy it.
Awesome. Excellent place to end. Very well said, you two. Thank you so much and best of luck. Hope to see a bunch of realignment listeners. Be sure to leave a realignment note when you sign up. Would love to see that as Packy McCormick did, if not boring his newsletter readers as well. Thank you for joining us in the realignment, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Reminder, Substack, subscription, bookshop, book purchases, and of course, huge thank you to Lincoln Network for supporting our work. We'll see you next time.